A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Adam Blomberg.
Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Good. That's good to hear that you are just fine. We've got a packed show. It's a long old show today, so let's dive straight into that. It's talking about another release/furloughed WWE star in the AEW NXT ratings and your mailbag questions. Here is the show. Things off with a note from the Observer that came out yesterday that has said that Nigel McGuinness has been furloughed by WWE. So apparently there was a report when they had Black Wednesday and they released or furloughed reportedly 40% of their staff. Some of the names weren't officially announced, and we've had a few of those names been revealed over time. And it turns out one of those names is Nigel McGuinness. Meltzer writes, the reason why McGuinness hasn't been around is he was one of the people furloughed during all the cuts. It's ironic, since he's one of the best analysts out of all of them, although Samoa Joe's delivery is superior.
Is that ironic?
That seems like it's ironic in the sense that Alanis Morissette doesn't quite understand what irony is.
Yeah.
I think what he was trying to say was, he's good and they shouldn't have furloughed him.
It's kind of like it's just bad judgment, really. It's not necessarily irony. It's just a combination of bad taste and bad luck, I guess.
Yeah.
Having 1,000 spoons and only needing a knife or whatever.
To quote, what's the Irish comedian who's got the amazing routine about that? Ed.
Oh, Leslie.
Man. No. Yes. Ed Leslie.
Ed Byrne is who you're thinking of.
Ed Byrne, thank you very much. Who has 10,000 spoons? Collectively, out of all of us, we don't have 10,000 spoons between us. It kind of sucks for Nigel McGuinness. But the one sort of bright side I'm supposed to take from this is that the furloughed staff that have included people like Shane Helms and some of the backstage producers are thought to have been, like, they will be brought back once all of this is done and dusted.
Yeah. That's the thing about, yeah. It's always difficult to kind of tell what furloughing means. Obviously, you can be furloughed. Like, we have a furloughing scheme in the UK currently. A lot of people have been sort of sent home, and a portion of their salary is being paid by the state, by the government. And unfortunately, like, as time has gone on, because that scheme is supposed to only last for a little bit, some people who are being furloughed are now being let go just because, like, the scheme has had to be changed. So it's difficult to tell, like, at what stage does a furloughing become a dismissal. So obviously, like, when Black Wednesday happened, a lot of people were released and a lot of people were furloughed, and it seemed like on the production side of things, like producers and agents and stuff, like, that was more furloughing, but talent was released. So it's just like, well, what? So does that mean released talent might come back? You just, because they're independent contractors, you can't call them furloughed. What, like, how permanent is all of this? It's difficult to kind of wrap your head around, but it's very sad. Like Nigel is great. I'm gutted not to hear. I thought it was, there was something like I was missing on NXT, and I was like, oh yeah. I don't watch a lot of NXT UK. I just assumed he was over there. Didn't know he was gone.
Let's be honest, no one watches that show. But yeah, I think that what we've learned since Black Wednesday is that the American furlough scheme is very different to our one here in the UK. We don't really kind of know what the status is of Nigel, but I think to let Nigel go, it is a massive, massive error, because he is really good on commentary. Like, he was an incredible wrestler. We were talking just before we came on air, you know, his amazing work in ROH. You weren't the biggest watcher of TNA, so I was kind of reliving some of the great TNA memories.
I'm a huge Desmond Wolfe fan. I remember, like, he came in, had like these amazing matches, but unfortunately Eric Bischoff came in and just decided that he wasn't good enough, so he was going to kind of curtail his push.
Literally just said verbatim words. So I mean, so you'll then remember what happened after that, right?
Yeah, but I don't like to talk about it because it's still so fresh, what with all this painful news I'm hearing.
The only reason I bring it up, because it's one of my like favorite LOL TNA moments, is when Bischoff and Hogan came in, they wanted to have a ranking system effectively that like sort of AEW have got now, but it was all done on fan voting, and it was done through like GoDaddy polls. And so like at the time they were really pushing Abyss, so they wanted Abyss to keep winning this poll, but Desmond Wolfe kept winning the poll because everyone loved Nigel McGuinness, because Nigel was so good. He came in, granted the name Desmond Wolfe is rubbish, but he came in and was great. Had a great match with Kurt Angle, then Bischoff and Hogan decided he was rubbish, stopped his push. And then, yeah, he kept winning the poll. And if you won the poll, you got a shot at the champion. And so Nigel kept winning. So they just booked him against the champion to lose in like 2 minutes. But he still kept winning the poll. In the end, they were like, well, we'll just scrap the poll then.
Oh, God, that's not the right answer. That's not what you take from that. This poll must be broken.
No, it's the poll that is wrong. Yeah, but I think like Nigel has been so good on commentary for NXT. I think him and Morrow are my favorite commentary duo in wrestling at the moment. Like outside of like Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, I love over in New Japan. But at least when they were working together in New Japan. But yeah, in sort of North America, I love Morrow and Nigel.
Yeah, they are like that is sort of like the purest distillation of NXT. They both. It's weird. They both have it's weird to see an announced team which is made up of people who are half and half color and half like play by play, because Marrow is play by play but provides easily the most emotion of anyone watching it. And same with Nigel, like whenever he gets really high pitched, I can't do a Nigel McGuinness impression.
But you're so good at your impressions.
Thanks. I haven't yet to hear back from Dean Ambrose on what he thought of my.
At least you avoided a Becky Lynch one in your most recent fantasy booking.
I almost went for it, but then I just remembered that the OSW boys would drag me into a car park and beat the shit out of me. Oh, I've sworn again.
And I swear now, again. Mate, I've got to do an edit now.
I've sworn. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's so early, Luke. You come to work an hour early to do this stuff. You make me wake up at 9 a.m.
Sorry,
to record
mate.
This for the people. That's Sorry, what you mate. Get. That's what you I, get. A little bit of extra work.
I was up 2 hours before that getting this show ready, mate.
I know. I'm coddled. But I had to write a booking. I've just had 5 days off in a row because it was my holiday.
But the other thing to talk about sort of that came out of the Observer this week is sort of an update on some of the other names that had been released, i.e. Kurt Angle, because Kurt Angle was on this week's NXT as part of the was it the pit fight match, wasn't it, between Riddle and Thatcher?
He was sort of on NXT, I guess. Technically, he was there. There are some amazing photos of him on NXT. Actually, I think I might have one in this StreamYard back end. It's because you know how Kurt Angle sort of got his Kurt Angle face?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like little bit. But there's a brilliant picture. I don't know if you'll be able to see it with this resolution, but do you see Kurt's face there watching the floating bro? That's amazing. Obviously, like I'm jesting because Kurt Angle is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, if not my favorite wrestler of all time. But yeah, he was basically there to pop a rating and did nothing, which is actually fine. I'm sort of glad they didn't do the kind of random hotshot swerve. You know, Shawn Michaels turns up, so obviously he has to super kick someone and, you know, do some dodgy officiating. Just there, held Timothy Thatcher's teeth and then called it right down the middle. It was fine.
So according to Meltzer, he says, we've not heard anything regarding Angle and a new deal. It was noted to us that Angle is still being paid through mid-July like the rest of the people on the main roster contracts that were released. The company will use talent if they have an idea for them, such as Drake Maverick in the Cruiserweight tournament, and it would make no sense to let him go after this recent push, and had planned to use Sarah Logan at one point. So Sarah Logan, and you know, our sources have said this as well, she was backstage after Black Wednesday. She was backstage at Raw that following Monday with plans for her to be used. My theory is because news got out, they cancelled those plans because WWE have been known to do that in the past. So apparently Angle isn't, or looking like he's not going to be re-signing. Neither is Sarah Logan. According to Meltzer in The Observer, her and Ray Rowe have just bought loads of land by their house and are looking to become self-sufficient and grow all of their own food and veg and stuff, which is lovely. And she's training for MMA fights.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah. They're gonna do the good life.
They're gonna be the good life, right?
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
For our American fans, The Good Life is a treasured British sitcom about people who do exactly that. A guy who kind of finds himself in a dead end marketing job, no joy. So they both decide to quit their jobs, turn their back garden into a kind of a huge plot of like an allotment, basically, and just sort of live off that and become, is it freegans? Is that the term?
And become the ire of their posh next door neighbors who aren't living the good life. They're living the rich life.
Yeah, Margot and what's his name?
The only one I can remember was Margot, annoyingly.
It was Margot and her catchphrase was always his name. It was
Richard.
Richard or Dennis? Hang on, goddamn. I'm looking this up.
Good Life. 1975 TV show.
Good Life.
Margot. Is it Jerry?
Jerry.
Jerry Ledbetter. Right. Jerry Ledbetter and Margot Ledbetter.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
1975. That's... What a show that was way ahead.
That was in
time.
The 70s? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I used to love that show.
Yeah, I watched it because they did a load of reruns of it in the 90s, which is when I saw it. So I saw it in the BBC went through a massive period in the 90s of just rerunning all of their 70s sitcoms all the time. And that's where I saw it.
God, the British sitcom legacy. Like, we're not producing much of anything these days. But like,
hey, not going out.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about Lee Mack. I always do.
The Good Life is basically what my brother's doing now as well, bless his heart.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Aww. My brother is like a fully self-sufficient kind of guy. He's a great He's a great man.
And here you are.
And here I am, making an ass of myself on YouTube. So the other thing I wanted to talk about on the subject of Drake Maverick, we had a mailbag question in from Austin who said, I know it's a hot topic about the Drake Maverick angle on if it's a work or a shoot. People, including myself, think it would be in bad taste to make a storyline out of it if it is a work. But what if originally they were going to fire Drake Maverick, saw the momentum he gained on social media, and saw the fire and passion he showed and changed their minds? What would be the right way to bring him back if that is the case? Just announce that we've reinstated him or make it a worked angle like some people think they may be doing now?
I think... I think you've got a kind of a taste question and a narrative question there, because I think they do rub up against each other. I kind of just want to say I kind of take contention with the idea that Drake showed the most passion out of everyone who got released. I understand why people view it that way, because he was genuinely emotional and it was easily the most retweetable thing out of coming out of Black Wednesday, because, well, yeah, it's human suffering at its most raw. That connects to people. Some people didn't do that, but were obviously still devastated, but just wanted to go about it a different way. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that Drake's handling it was better. It was just more, it was easier for WWE to use. That being said, I think, like, it's the best stuff on NXT, like, right now, for me, at least. Like, the triple threat match they had to decide who was going to win the block between Kushida, Jake Atlas, and Drake Maverick was amazing. And he's such a good babyface. Like, me and Pete talk about this on the latest NXT podcast review. He's, yeah, such a pure, humble, like, good guy. And there are so few good guy babyfaces, like, that have no kind of cynical edge or terrible stand-up shtick, but he's just good. He's just trying to do the right thing. And I hope he does win. I got a feeling he won't, because I think El Hijo del Fantasma's got a heel turn coming. But if he does win, yeah, I hope they announce that they've re-signed him and just try and put the kind of dark storm cloud of tastelessness that kind of hangs over Drake Maverick to bed, and just kind of hope that people move on, which is, I'm sure they will, because ultimately, happy for Drake Maverick, I guess. It's just, yeah, I don't want them to do it. It's been fun, but what I don't want them to do is, like, Drake, you've got the championship, but next time you lose it, you're out. So every single defense, he's like, I've got to do it for, like, because that shtick will get old fast. I hope they just re-sign him, and then, like, his popularity continues and he has a nice, happy, long career with the company. And then everyone else who was released finds better work elsewhere.
Yeah, just move on. It's the Tory government advice. Yeah, the reason why I wanted to bring up the Drake Maverick theme, because it was very interesting looking at the ratings for this week. Meltzer kind of teased this before he released The Observer, was that there was a really interesting note from the ratings between NXT and AEW, in that one of the matches on NXT drew over 700,000 viewers. And it wasn't the main event between Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher. And in fact, it was the Drake Maverick match. NXT opened with 771,000 viewers, 252,000 in the 18 to 49 demographic for Maverick versus Kushida versus Atlas. That was their highest point of the whole show, because they ended the night with 731,000 viewers as an average overall. And I think they sort of dipped below 700. I think it was like 650 or something for the main event. So Maverick, as it would seem, and the storyline, is something of a draw. And if you are someone who is looking at ratings to be a, you know, is this a way to determine if someone is over or not, then you've probably got to make a good case for Maverick here getting his job back.
Yeah, human suffering is over. Like, yeah. people really dig it. It's good telly.
And actually, do you know what? I mean, it's been a really bad few weeks for news, not just in the wrestling world, but sort of all over the world, really. Yeah. Apart from New Zealand, who are doing very well at the moment, which is, but the some good news, some brightness here, is that the Wednesday night rating wars were excellent this week, with both AEW and NXT up massively. Double or Nothing, or coming off the back of Double or Nothing, AEW Dynamite had 827,000 viewers. That's up 18% from last week. It's the highest total viewership since March 18th. So really, really good news for those. Some people are putting that down to the Mike Tyson thing. Some people are putting that down to just the really big success of Double or Nothing, because it would seem as well, going by early indicators, the pay-per-view did really well as well.
Like, oh, great.
Even in the sort of like uncertain times, the pay-per-view did more or less the same numbers as Double or Nothing did last year.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's only good news.
Exactly, yeah. And they were up 23% in the 18 to 49 demographic as well, with a 0.32. And NXT was also up 23.5% from last week with that 731,000 viewers. And their The 18 to 49 was up nearly 50%, 46.2%, averaging a 0.19 rating. It's a combined audience of 1.5 million viewers, the highest since March 4th, and is only 200,000 off what Raw did on Monday.
Do you think it's something similar to be like, because obviously, like, no fans wrestling is not what we consider wrestling to be. Like, wrestling is by its nature a crowd sport, and that's what makes it so much fun. Do you think it's just like people are, because obviously, like, everyone's a you know, love of wrestling has dipped slightly, and you've seen that with the plummeting ratings there. Generally speaking, especially for more casual fans, people don't want to watch wrestling in front of empty seats. Do you think people are just kind of like, they're missing wrestling and they're just kind of coming back around? Do you think this is an upward trend, or do you think this is a spike based on just Double or Nothing increasing everyone's awareness of, like, kind of the more hardcore aspect of the wrestling fandom?
Well, it was also, so NASCAR last week had a bit of an impact on both NXT and AEW, more so NXT, but there was no NASCAR this week, which is why Meltzer thinks that the ratings might have been up for both shows, as well as the post Double or Nothing side of things. So it could be, well, you know, we'll sort of see next week, but I really do hope that this is an upward trend again, and people are sort of coming back to it. We are, you know, here in the UK, we're getting sports back very soon. Football is coming home. And so maybe people will be able to, once they get their sports back, be able to get back into watching wrestling, even with no fans. Particularly if you're going to watch football with no fans, maybe you'll just sort of come around to the idea of it.
Yeah, it's football with no fans. It's going to be like, I do get it because you don't like see the fans all the time, but it's just going to be, it will be even starker of just what football is. Just like, it goes.
It's going to be like doing a magazine show with you, bleeping swears all the time. And just because, like, they're filthy mouth little buggers, those football players.
You can really hear them biting each other without the fans, can't you?
Before we get into the mailbag as well, I did want to point out, I do think my brother is a great man. It sounded like I was being a bit sarcastic when I said that he is awesome.
I believed you!
I just wanted to make it very clear, my brother's amazing.
Really great guy.
What a great guy. Sipping my coffee in the morning. Anyway.
At no point did I think you were being sarcastic. It's like, yeah, self-sufficiency in this world is a beautiful thing.
It really, like, is.
The polar opposite of YouTube in terms of contributing to the planet.
My brother is a hero among men. He once bought a cabin in the woods, effectively, that was basically derelict. And him and his girlfriend at the time, this was when they were living in Sweden, just built it from scratch, like just rebuilt the whole thing from scratch. And the whole thing was completely self-sufficient. There was everything was solar powered, and it was amazing. Absolutely wonderful little place. Shame he has money from it.
My older sister is a mother of two with a third on the way and a primary school teacher. So sure, like, makes me feel bad. Here I am saying how WWE should have booked Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. Oh, I shouldn't have had Charlotte in there. Making a difference.
Really making that difference.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On to the mailbag. If you want to submit a question to the mailbag, all you got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon at any dollar amount and leave a comment in the community tab labeled mailbag. Do not email me. I will just lose it. Ali Atta is in first to say, hello, guys. Hope you're doing well and safe. I just watched the Firefly Funhouse match for the seventh time since it aired on WrestleMania. What match do you guys watch again and again when you're bored and there's nothing else to watch? Stay safe and keep up the great work.
I think of all the matches I've watched, I think the match I've watched the most, it's a combination. Like I watch Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan a lot. I love it so much, especially that one moment. I think everyone knows which moment I'm talking about. Just when the referee goes down, he hoofs Brock in the knackers and then goes for the running knee and gets that, because no one does a near fall better than Brock Lesnar. He's so good at it. He's such a good wrestler. But yeah, that in terms of like classic matches, I think I've watched most over the years. Probably makes me sound a little bad. Well, maybe not, but it's Vince versus Shane at WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? That match is great though. Like that is like that is pure sports entertainment.
Yeah, I think it's the match I've shown to people most to kind of show them what wrestling is. I remember talking about this with Kenny years and years back at What Culture, and like sort of like what are the best matches to show someone to try and get them into the hobby, because it shouldn't, like, depending on what they are, like TLC 2 maybe do if they really like stunt work, but generally speaking, like, you're not going to get someone into wrestling, I think, making them watch Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker. But it's like something like Vince versus Shane, father versus son with drugged up mum in the corner. Like it's a tale as old as time. They're all Cain and Abel.
Cuddly McFoley as a referee.
Yeah. I think that just, again, like maybe it's less like watching whole matches, but there are just moments I've just become obsessed with, and fan reactions generally. Like that's what I love about wrestling. It's like specific moments that get over with the fans, why they get over with the fans, the psychology behind that. And just, yeah, hearing the pop for Linda when she stands from her chair is just,
yeah,
it's addictive to hear. Like it's really, really great. Same with like the Backlash 2000 when Stone Cold's music hits, just like perfect little explosions of noise and kind of going back to them over and over again. Probably that match. What about you?
I think the Triangle Ladder match from WrestleMania 2000 is a match that I've watched countless times over the years. And then, you know, the WrestleMania X7 follow-up, even though it's not the best match on the show, because that's the hardcore triple threat, obviously. But yeah, I mean, that's another match I've watched so many times. Because me and my mates used to watch it a lot. Like when we had it on VHS, we watched that match a lot because it's so funny. And it's just, it's a tremendous little match. And then you would fast forward and watch the Triangle Ladder match, the TLC match. So yeah, so I think like from that sort of period of time, anything that's got the Hardys, the Dudleys and Edge and Christian in, I'm more than likely going to rewatch it a lot.
Rumbles, actually. I've pre-watched every Rumble like upward, like almost 10 times because they're perfect to put on when you're cooking.
Totally.
Whack it on. You know exactly what's happening because you've seen it all before, but just like little things that you don't remember, just perfect.
On that note as well, actually, before we move on with the next mailbag question, AEW review yesterday, Ollie and I have made the executive decision to we're gonna try our own version of F Kenny, essentially, by renaming him Kenny after his favorite wrestler.
Well, I look forward to never having him back on Quizzlemania, I guess. Thanks, Kenny. Thanks for sharing out, mate.
Kenny, please.
Hello.
Chuck Turner said, hi guys, question. How long do you think NXT, how long do you think Karrion Kross will be in NXT once Vince gets a look at Scarlett Bordeaux?
Yeah, it does kind of feel like, certainly Scarlett's days down there are numbered. She did a thing on NXT where she basically just showed up at ringside and just looked at Ciampa, and it's just like, oh gosh, she's compelling, is Scarlett. I really hope that, I think a combination of things are going to hotshot Karrion Kross to the NXT championship. For sure. I think Scarlett is one of them. I think she really, really adds something to just the general package, the general presentation of him. But there's less lip syncing than there was. They've done an entrance since, and she doesn't lip sync the first bit of the song. She does Fall and Pray, which is amazing, which is not me. She's great. I love the entrance, but she used to lip sync the whole thing, and I preferred that because it was different, it was weird, and I think maybe people were like, oh, I didn't like that, so they kind of hastily changed it. Shame. Bring it back, listen to me. And I think, yeah, that general, the he's got best entrance in wrestling currently, an amazingly kind of beautiful very talented facially manager. He'll be NXT champion within the year for sure, and then probably lose it after like two attempts because Vince will want him on Raw, and he'll do fine.
Dylan from Cork says, not too long after this pandemic began, Ashleen and I were putting together a bucket list of cities we would like to visit and things we would like to do that we've never done before. The current situation around the world has made us realize how short life really is. We want to make the most of it when things are back up and running. Some of those cities include Tokyo, Toronto, Edinburgh, Madrid, Milan, and London. The last I have a specific reason for wanting to visit, and that is to meet you in person. We've included activities as big as going to the Champions League final or running a marathon, to as small as going to different restaurants in Cork on a Saturday night for dinner and seeing what which one we've most enjoyed. What are some of the activities you guys are most looking forward to doing post-Carino, and what places would you like to visit? Cork's a hidden gem of a city, just saying.
Of the thing I'm missing the most is board game night. So like I, because it's just, it's who I am, board games are my favorite thing. They way outpace wrestling. So I love board games so much. It feels weird to say that once everything is lifted, the thing I'm most looking forward to is staying in. Yeah. But I want to have my friends over and play. There's so many games that we're in the middle of, like legacy games, campaign games. And there's just games that I haven't been able to play just because they don't quite work online. That's how I enjoy socializing with my friends, is getting everyone together, everyone having a few beers, some pizza, and then just playing for hours on end, like social deduction, like strategy, everyone kind of doing funny voices, getting really into it, having like a thematic soundtrack on in the background. Like, that is my idea of a perfect night, and I miss it. So I haven't had a board game night since February, which is the longest I've ever gone, and it's I'm climbing the walls. I keep buying board games, Luke, and I can't play them. I bought a board game, it literally arrived yesterday, which is, there's a game called The Crew. Have you heard of that? It's been nominated for the Kenner Spiel this year, which, for those who don't know, a Spiel des Jahres are basically the Oscars of the board game world. And there's like, you've got Best Picture, which is Spiel des Jahres Game of the Year. And you've got the Kenner Spiel, which is basically a board gamer's board game. So like something that's a bit more involved, a bit more hobby, but still great. And yeah, it's like a competitive trick-taking game set in space. And I know that's not selling it, but I'm really excited and I can't play it. And the pub, of course. I would like to go to the pub.
Yeah, but I mean, I said this yesterday on Twitter, but like the intro to the WrestleTalk podcast show on the Fight Network here in the UK really has made me miss hanging out with like everyone from the team and just being in the office together and just seeing my friends and going on the pub and just jetting the breeze. It's very nice doing it over Zoom and whatnot, but yeah, Just I miss actual interaction.
I miss being able to talk over someone else and for it not to cause an error in the connection. That's what I miss. Because it's so weird. Like everyone's way of talking to each other has changed. Like, Luke is talking. I need to be quiet, otherwise it will literally ruin the feed. It's so weird. Like this conversation's different now.
Flaming Clive said, maybe I'm overthinking this, but who will betray Kevin Owens? HBK put Marty Jannetty into the window. Chris Jericho put HBK into a TV monitor. Kevin Owens put Chris Jericho into a TV monitor. So with this chain, Kevin Owens is going to go into some glass. Who will it be?
Well, who's he?
Who's he feuding with? No one. He's doing nothing at the moment on Raw.
I was saying, who was he allied with? It was Samoa Joe. That would have been quite fun. I just like the idea that Kevin Owens can never be betrayed. He's always the betrayer. Like, he can't not. It's in his DNA. He has to be the person to break up friendships because he doesn't know how to deal with them on an emotional level. So he's just, I'm getting a little too close. I'm relying on someone. I can't deal with that. So I better break their spine on the ring.
Our next couple of messages were left sort of in the wake of the Shad Gaspard and Hana Kimura stuff. So because, our messaging system, say, it's a week between each show, just to forewarn anyone. But Andrew said this comes in just after the learning of the passing of Hana Kimura. Heartbreaking, so bear with me. Suicide and depression are real. You don't know what others are going through. Don't attack people online. Just because you hide behind the screens doesn't mean your words mean less. I've been struggling with this for years. My best friend ended his own life in our junior year of high school. Ashley Mazzaro was a co-worker at my radio station. I'm so sick of the hate. I'm so sick of the pain some of us have chosen to cause. To Ollie, Pete, Luke, Andy, Laurie, Adam, and everyone else behind the scenes, thank you. We love you. I've been lucky enough to have interactions with most of the core group, and they are all lovely guys. I'm disgusted every time I see one of you posting about what these cyberbullies are doing. My insides eat up whenever it gets mentioned, because that means it's come to a boiling point. This might be have been rambling, but my heart is heavy right now. Thank you for all you've done for us, the SWAF Nation. I promise you that the people who make these terrible comments towards you are not your real fans. They're trolls with no life who get a sick pleasure in trying to hurt others. You guys go out of your way to give us content and smiles to our faces. I swear this will be the last time that you ever... We will at least be there for you to lean back on. Support WrestleTalk and be kind to each other.
Very articulately put. Really well said.
Really well said.
Yeah, like we obviously like this is something you encounter, like it's something I encountered on What Culture, of course. It's very easy to forget that there's someone at the end of the screen, especially with the whole numbers aspect of especially Twitter and Facebook, is that the pursuit of numbers is a little bit like trying to rack up a high score. Because the human brain is designed to receive certain stimulus and some people discern achievement in different ways, and doing something that causes an impact gets those numbers up, gets those replies up, that kind of can release something in you that makes you feel like you have a more impact on this planet, and there is a real dark and ugly side of that. It's something that I think in our profession, we're able to kind of recognize, and like I myself don't let myself read too many comments or get too emotionally invested in social media, just because I know that side of the internet exists. Not everyone is as versed in that. Not everyone is kind of as lucky as to be able to compartmentalize in that way. And all you can ask really is for people to be empathic of that and please understand the impact that your words can have. It was really just a like you say, it's been a horrible week, just globally, but in the wrestling world, a lot of loss and just a lot of pain and anger, and a lot of anger bouncing off anger. And support WrestleTalk has always been the kind of the company watchword, and we definitely feel support from our fans, which vastly outweighs the any negativity. I think we're very, very fortunate as a channel in that regard. Yeah, so I'm rambling just because it's a sad situation. I don't have a definitive thing to say on it, really. I'll hand over to you.
No, I mean, I think that we have got an excellent fan base, like an absolutely outstanding fan base of fans, and you guys are all amazing and awesome. And, you know, we've seen it in live streams. There have been a couple of rotten eggs in the live streams and in the comments, but I would say that the good people that we have in this fan base vastly outweighs them. And those people that are there to just be trolls and be dicks are quite quickly weeded out. So I think that the Swat Nation is awesome. I
do as well. Want to just like, because we shout them out, but just especially on this subject, I just want to shout out like a huge thank you to all of our moderators for all of our live streams, because you guys are the ones who have to literally sift through looking for the darker side of the comment section. You have to go in there and actively seek out people attempting to upset other people. So thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah, really is.
Who does that for us? We love you, and we hope you're okay and have the support network you need.
RLT Sandwich on a sort of similar note says, before I get to my question, I'd like to say RIP to both Shad Gaspard and Hannah Kimura. I'd also like to thank Ollie for coming into the studio and continue to record the news every day during these trying times, especially when it feels like each day there's a new tragedy to report on. I know it can't be easy. Thank you for your continued efforts and remain consistently consistent. For a more lighthearted question, if there was a Create a WrestleTalk cinematic universe, what pay-per-view name would you give your first movie, and what wrestler would be your lead star? Thank you all. Stay safe and be kind. Fun fact for you, RLT Sandwich, Ollie films those new segments in his living room. He hasn't gone, none of us have been to the studio since lockdown. He's doing it all from his living room, much to the chagrin of his girlfriend.
Yeah.
That big 10-foot green screen that he decided to take home that stretches into his kitchen.
My favorite thing that's emanated from Ollie's flat, and I realize this is not the aspect of the question they wanted us to focus on, but today is Friday. This will be going out today, right?
It will be, yeah. Cool.
So today is the day where over on patreon.com/NoRollsBard, the latest one shot of No Rolls Barred is going to be released, our cowboy episode, which is 2 hours and 15 minutes of glory. I watched it back because I was proofing it with Laurie. I think personally it's the best thing we've done.
Oh, amazing.
I loved watching it back. It's so funny because there's loads of music. Rich has done some little effects because it was easier for Rich to kind of put together this time, and he had longer to edit it, so the production value on it's a lot higher. You know, the fact we were all in costume, I love like your Stone Cold Steve Austin impression. It's a joy. Point is, there's one bit, and I think it got edited out. I hope it didn't, but maybe it did. But there's a bit where Ollie's girlfriend is in the back. It's in the back of the shot, and she doesn't, so basically she walks into like, she's like, look she's my hand, she walks into frame, so she's like this much into frame, and then thinks, right, well, I don't want to walk through the back of the shot, so then gets down onto the floor and crawls along the floor behind Ollie, and it's so adorable because I definitely don't want to interrupt shooting, but just walks straight into frame and then it goes directly downwards and it just starts kind of smoking across the floor.
I didn't spot her until she was crawling on all fours. Like, I didn't spot her until she was the other side of Ollie's chair. And I was like, oh, this is Ollie's lady partner.
That really got me. What was the other part of the question?
Oh, yeah. If you were to create a WrestleTalk cinematic universe, what pay-per-view name would you give to your first movie? And who would be what wrestler would you have as your lead star? Well, obviously, Keith Lee is the answer there. What pay-per-view name would we give to the first movie? Backlash, probably. It's a pay-per-view that comes up so much. Like, even before you and I were doing these magazine shows, me and Ollie's running joke was that whatever pay-per-view came after WrestleMania was called Backlash, even if it wasn't. It was like, it's probably Backlash. So It's probably Backlash just became our catchphrase for whatever the next pay-per-view coming up for WWE is. So no. It's probably Backlash.
Like, well, that's the thing, is like, do you start with the Iron Man, or do you start with like who the Nick Fury of that world would be? Because the Nick Fury is Triple H for me, anyway. Like, he's the one that you can imagine like traveling the world and like recruiting all these people. I'm putting a team together. It started with a whisper. So like, who would be the person? I think maybe like, I think a Finn Balor would be a pretty good kind of place to start. Just like this kind of demon. And then, yeah, he conquers some sort of huge kind of Gallic monster. And then he just goes home to find Triple H in his hotel room. You know, I'm putting a team together. The WWCU.
Callum says, a couple of weeks ago, I started watching The Simpsons for the first time.
The first time? Oh my God, you're so lucky.
I would like to know, when does the series start to go downhill? And what's your personal favorite episode that I can look forward to? I'd also like to end this by saying, rest in peace, Shad Gaspard, and rest in peace, Hannah Kimura. So, Simpsons. First time watching The Simpsons. What a fun thing that must be. I'm actually very envious of that, considering that I've watched like seasons 1 through 12 countless times.
Yeah, stick with one as well. Like, it won't quite make sense, and like the animation will be really weird, and the coloring and the composition of everything will be off. Because like I'm rewatching it all at the moment as well. That's the other thing I watch when I cook. And like the first season is just like Moe's bar is just like the walls are just like this weird faded blue kind of watercolor background. It's all so weird. But I'm in the middle of series 5 at the moment, and I can't believe how good it is. Like, there's so many jokes I didn't get, and I'm enjoying. For me, I think the thing that you're most looking forward to, depending on how, like, you don't even have to like baseball, but Homer at Bat is just unbelievably good. It's when it's Steve Sachs gets pulled over by the cops, and he says, it says here you're from New York City. I heard about a guy who got killed in New York City. They never found out who did it. And Steve Sachs says, but there's hundreds of unsolved murders in New York City. You don't know where to stop talking, do you, sexy boy?
Perfect. I think there's sort of like the unwritten rule is that Simpsons gets bad with the episode with Armin Tanzarian. Like, that is what a lot of people pinpoint, is that's when The Simpsons goes downhill. I really disagree with that. I think there's actually some good stuff still to be found in, some really good stuff, in fact, in series 10 and 11. But I think from sort of 12, 13 onwards, that's for me when it starts to tail off a little bit. There are still like the handful of good episodes, but it's not the consistent quality that you would get from, say, seasons 3 up until 9. Like, it's consistently great, and like every episode is an absolute winner. My personal favorite, though, is The Last Temptation of Homer. It's the Mindy episode.
Oh, yeah.
I've at university, I used to describe to my friends as the Airplane of Simpsons episodes. Because the great thing about Airplane is that if you don't find a joke in Airplane funny, it's okay, because there's another joke 30 seconds later that you will find funny. And that's what I think is I think The Last Temptation of Homer is just like every line is just joke, 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 joke. And it's so good. It's so funny.
I think for me, just I watched The Simpsons, like some of it when it came out and as it happened, but there were some things that I kind of missed. And I'm very sad that I wasn't like a full-fledged like teenage Simpsons fan when the Who Shot Mr. Burns was happening, because that is such a good episode. And the fact there was a whole season in between part one and part two. And it was such a good payoff as well. Like, that is a huge thing to look forward to. I think just that Moe segment where he's on the lie detector machine, just perfect scenes. Like, it's such a good show. I'm so jealous that you get to watch it fresh for the first time, and you're gonna have an amazing time.
And I will recommend it on every podcast I ever do. Talking Simpsons is a fantastic podcast series where they do really deep dives into every episode in chronological order. They've just finished recapping season 1 again, because it's the 30th anniversary. So they went back and rewatched season 1 now with like everything that they know from sort of like the, because they've up to season 11, I think. So they've gone back to like a rewatch season one with sort of everything they know now. Their recap of season one is absolutely fantastic. So much like really good deep dive knowledge and interviews and stuff with the people that worked on the show. Cannot recommend it enough. It's also where I learned the Who Shot Mr. Burns. It was originally going to be Barney, was the original.
Was it really?
One. And they were going to like put him in jail, and he was going to be gone for a couple of like gone for all of that season and then sort of come back. But Matt Groening was the one who said, no, the show is called The Simpsons. It has to be one of The Simpsons. Which is why they were like, well, we can't send one of The Simpsons to jail. So spoilers for a show that aired in like 1997 or whatever it was Maggie. Because that was the only way they could see themselves getting out of this situation.
I thought that was always the plan, like taking candy from a baby.
Yeah.
Like that whole thing was set up so well. What was Barney's reason? Oh, because they shut down Moe's.
Yeah. They took away the beer. Chris Gardner says, got a lot of mail quack questions to get through. Yeah. Chris Gardner, currently listening to the NXT Unstoppable review on Patreon. Thanks for the plug. And only mentioned missing crowds, which got me thinking. What are some of the notorious hot crowds other than the ECW One Night Stand shows and Money in the Bank 2011 that I can go and watch a show with a crowd that is good and loud in the right way / most of the way through? Thanks for the continued hard work, and a special thank you to Luke for responding to my email last week. I really appreciate it. Things are on the up. That's very good to hear. So yeah, a show with a hot crowd.
Any AEW pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Like those guys are really into that company, and it's really nice to like. I was watching Revolution again just because we did the list, the top 10 list of top 10 AEW matches, and go and watch it again, because and I was just rewatching Revolution. It's like damn, they're picking up on everything, and just that Orange Cassidy pack match, just when you know they kick each other in the shins, and it's going oh, it's just
yeah.
It's the good side of wrestling, that.
I would also say, from a WWE side of things, you mentioned it earlier, Vince versus Shane from WrestleMania X7. Like, you want a hot crowd. Probably not the main event, because the crowd aren't quite as hot as they should have been, because they were super behind Austin when they really wanted them to be super behind The Rock. And then Austin turns heel, and the crowd still sort of cheer, but don't really know what to do next. They're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to boo Austin, but he is my favorite, so I think I will cheer, but he is doing a bad thing.
Ah, sod it. He won the title in Texas. We're cheering. It doesn't matter.
Sean Dunn, WrestleTalk interviews have been brilliant. Are there any plans on Golden Joe doing an interview? Also, parts of unknown, CBW D&D is amazing. Any plans of a normal D&D quest in the future? You have a great dungeon master. It would be fun to see what you do.
Oh, God. So my initial reaction was, I hate that. But actually, the more I think about it, the idea of Ollie doing a Golden Joe interviewing character is really, really funny.
Yeah.
That would be really funny. Just get Tom to interview. Oh, sorry. What was the second part? I was literally carried away thinking about Golden Joe.
Would we ever do just a straight up fantasy Dungeons and Dragons one-shot adventure?
Well... So, in terms of No Rolls Barred, like wrestling side, we are going to put up so it's coming out today on our Patreon. After it comes out, a few hours afterwards, we're going to put up a poll for the next setting. And we're probably going to keep like the top three that almost made it. And then we're going to introduce another three settings, just to kind of keep things fresh and interesting. But one of the top three settings was a fantasy one. Mm. Like that was, I think the close second was Victorian. Then I think it was, Wild West won, Victorian was very close behind, then it was fantasy, and then it was pirates. So we're probably going to keep those three. So if you want to see us do actual something close to D&D in a D&D setting, go become a patron and vote there. But in terms of an actual like just a regular game with no wrestling involved, possibly, but because there's always there are you know, maybe plans down the road for something a little less wrestling, a little more gaming. Who knows don't want to put the cart before the horse, and it's certainly not while the world is in the state it's in. But it is something that we've especially talked about off the back of No Rolls Barred being such a fun thing for us all to do in the office.
Mm-hmm. Flev Doran, it says, hey guys, I'm back to being a pledgehammer after a 2-month hiatus due to you know what, and I'd love to how you guys have made the best of it, especially with Quizlemania. Love that show. I have a suggestion for the next future charity stream. In keeping with the tradition of sacrificing one's hairy feature, when Ollie doesn't end his defeated streak, he should shave his chest hair. The nation's goals could be different ways of removal, shaving, cream, waxing, from least to worst in the pain scale. Yes, my first message after coming back is to see Ollie's hairy chest. So yeah, who knows?
Who knows? I I'm not as intimately acquainted with Ollie as you are, Luke. Mm-hmm.
Not many people are.
No, and it's been a while. How hairy are we talking?
Ollie is a hairy boy. He is a hairy, hairy boy. Not quite. I mean, his arms are a little bit. I was about to say not like Robin Williams level of like the hairy knuckles and stuff, but his arms are, and his chest certainly is. He's a very hairy boy.
Well, he's very two-toned. Like, you can sort of see on my arm that it kind of, there's a little bit of density here, and then it just fades away as it goes up my arm. Ollie looks like he's sort of wearing, like, the kind of, like, muffler sleeves that you wear, like, in winter. Like, he's incredibly hairy here, and then it stops. Mm. And it's like, he's almost got, like, a farmer's tan, but for hair. So, but underneath it gets, like...
Yeah.
It gets hairy again, does it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And his legs as well. His legs are so hairy, you cannot see his tattoo that he has on his leg.
He has a tattoo? Literally, he did the AJ Lee thing around the office, and I did not notice a tattoo on his legs.
Yeah. This question is from Chris. It's a fun tattoo as well. He did it himself.
What's the tattoo of? Yes, that's the next bit. Tell me that bit.
It is the equation for photosynthesis.
What? No, it isn't. What a nerd. God, I want to just knock the papers out of his hand. Why did he do that?
He did it himself as well. At university, they had a tattoo party where they got a tattoo gun off eBay and then all gave themselves tattoos. and that was the tattoo he chose.
Oh, my Lord. Why photosynthesis?
I don't know. Next question is from Chris, who says, if you had to book The Undertaker's last ever match, who would it be against? Where would you have it take place, and what kind of match would it be? Look forward to your answer of Keith Lee in a Boneyard match. Have a great weekend, lads.
Well, this is tricky because it might be something I'm preparing something for. So, okay. With the Last Ride series, I think Undertaker's retirement is pretty much on everyone's mind. So... I thought pretty good booking video in that. So I'm not going to answer because it gives them where I'm going away with it.
I would like to see it be somewhat a young guy that he can put over on the way out. I don't need it to be a spooky character. Like, I just need it to be a young star is what I would like it to be. Irakli says, will wrestlers become employees instead of independent contractors once Triple H takes over the company? I personally don't think so. I think that a leopard never changes its spots. And in this case, the leopard is WWE.
Yeah, I really want wrestlers to unionize.
Yeah,
I really, really do. But I don't know. I really don't. Like, there's so many kind of things to talk about, like what will happen when Vince goes. I think it's the fair thing to do. I think people are generally kind of optimistic about where Triple H will take the company in a kind of quality direction and like an artistic one. I've no idea as to kind of Triple H's business practices. I would hope that they can sort of use it as a kind of turn the corner and bring everyone on and provide them their full benefits and pay their travel and you know, compensate them for during injury time. But yeah, not sure if I see it happening.
Yeah, I don't know. Dan says, I've been hearing a lot lately that wrestling has forgotten its audience. Show these days, be it WWE or any other promotion, are only produced for a nerd audience, in quotation marks, having driven away the mainstream audience by completely presenting a rather unrealistic style paired with wrestlers that do not look larger than life anymore and could be compared to any regular fit person. I've seen this statement brought forward by former wrestlers, editors of magazine, not WrestleTalk, and fans as of late. While the argument has always been there, it has now been all over the place with cinematic matches being a thing. What is your take on this? I believe WWE, the running ad for the entire industry for the mainstream audience, has failed to create compelling stars due to its hokey gimmicks, failed pushes, and uncompelling storylines. Nearly got through that whole question there, holding that in, and it came.
Did you feel it? You just had it there, didn't you?
I'm very sorry. That was quite disgusting. But I'm already doing one edit on this show. I'm not doing another one.
I could swear if that would help.
I'll just say, and then I'll say,
"Yay! I broke him."
So what do you think? I suppose the question is wrestling only produced now for the hardcore audience?
I don't think it's produced for the hardcore audience. I think it's watched by the hardcore audience. Especially now. I think they should properly go studio with it and just reward the people who are tuning in. Just turn it into more NXT. I think WWE have always been, for a very, very long time, they've just been a bit family focused and doing kind of like variety entertainment. And the only problem, which I don't have a problem with, the only problem is they're not very hugely good at certain aspects of variety entertainment, namely comedy. Sometimes they are. I think they, in terms of telling stories, I think to say that by doing like lots of cinematic matches that they are only catering to the hardcore, I don't necessarily understand that. I think that the Boneyard match was the most mainstream friendly thing they've done in years. Really? Like, I know it's not wrestling, but it's what you know, if you ask a fan like, oh, what do you expect from an Undertaker match? Most of what happened in the Boneyard. I actually think they have had, in some ways, more mainstream appeal. Like, I think the idea of the Money in the Bank match is more mainstream. I think the fact that they are taking things out of the ring, I don't think that's catering to the hardcore. I think that is kind of like going like kind of caught mainstream crowds and doing a pretty good job of it. It's for me, like, where I feel like they've lost their way is just the fact that Raw feels so aimless because they don't really know what they're building towards, because they're on a skeleton staff with a skeleton crew of wrestlers. And instead of like doing stuff like NXT, which is just like, just tightly focus, do some squash matches and just like understand who you've got for this month and just like focus on them. They're just sort of going like all over the place with, and the thing that I kind of baffles me, and I think I can understand where someone might say, oh, they're sort of losing it, is when you look at like Street Profits versus Viking Raiders, like that kind of axe throwing, pie eating, Renaissance Fair, like that for me, I get nothing out of, just because again, WWE's brand of comedy ain't my thing. And I think you could argue that like they're sort of losing their way there, but I actually think like that in terms of like doing the best in a difficult time, like whether or not WWE should be going ahead is a different story, but the stuff they've been doing, I think actually they've produced some really great stuff.
Yeah. We're going to try not to rattle through some of these questions because we are running out of time here.
Sorry.
That's okay, mate. Alex Kirkman says, I'm not blaming you at all, mate. Alex Kirkman says, I really enjoy the Hall of Fame. I enjoy the stories, and I think it's a nice way to recognize old wrestlers, even ones who have never main evented, for example, Coco Beware. He wasn't a main eventer. The Hall of Fame was probably the pinnacle of his WWE career, and no doubt he was honored by the induction. My opinion is the general consensus in WrestleTalk is that you guys think it means nothing and is a waste of time. My question is, am I right? And if so, what can be done to sway your opinions? P.S. I do think there should be a physical Hall of Fame or museum of some kind. I think when I say things like, because we often get a lot of questions like, who would you like to see in the Hall of Fame? And I've always said, it doesn't matter. What I mean by that is that the Hall of Fame isn't a real thing because it's just one person who has decided this person is a Hall of Fame wrestler this year. It doesn't really matter. Like, it's not a Hall of Fame in the sense of it's based on actual achievement. It is just a way to recognize people, and that's very lovely and everything, but then I've at the same time, if it is just one person who makes random decisions every year, I don't think you can put a lot of stock in who actually goes in and who doesn't go in. That's always been my sort of general consensus on this. I think Warrior, you know, put it right. the WWE released a hit documentary on him, a hit piece on him, that said that he was self-destructed, an awful person, this, that, and the other. And, you know, in fairness, at times he was a very awful person. And then a couple of years later wanted to put him in the Hall of Fame because they wanted to build a bridge with him. So it's, you know, they were going to do the same with Bret Hart. There was going to be a documentary called The Rise and Fall of Bret Hart, or The Self-Destruction of Bret Hart. And then they brought him in and put him in the Hall of Fame instead. So either you think he's a terrible person and is dreadful, or he's Hall of Fame. Like, it can't go both ways.
Yeah, I think it's when it's like the Hall of Fame is used to make statements that really emphasizes what kind of a fallacy the whole thing is. But that being said, I see the other side of it, and that's the point is, like, no matter what it means to us, you have to comprehend the idea of what it means for the wrestler being inducted, like, because these are people, like, wrestlers really, really like wrestling, you know, like, this is an industry that they've dedicated themselves to the point of, like, keeping kayfabe, putting themselves at risk. There's a real brotherhood in the locker room. Obviously, like, the Hall of Fame doesn't mean a lot to everybody. Hall of Fame probably doesn't mean much to Scott Steiner, but to someone, like you said, like, to someone like Coco Beware, it's a genuine honor to be publicly recognized by your peers, to have someone say you did a good job. You are part of an elite group of people who have made a difference in this industry. Whether or not you hold stock in that is sort of irrelevant when you see how happy it makes some people who are inducted. And, you know, so for that reason, yeah, absolutely. It's an institution that has provided a lot of people a lot of joy, even if only those people are the people that have been inducted. I just had a stroke. My sentence really went away from me. No, but I watched the Dark Side of the Ring thing with Martha Hart saying that she never wants to see Owen go in. And I completely get it. Like, bless you.
Bless you.
And so I completely understand that the Hall of Fame is sometimes used as an olive branch that hasn't been earned. And it's a way sometimes of WWE saying it's all good between us because he's in the Hall of Fame. Can't hate the company if he's in the Hall of Fame, right? And for that sense, yeah, it does have a PR purpose, but, you know, like, yeah, of course it will mean a lot to people who are inducted, and you never want to cheapen that by saying it means nothing.
And in the sense, like, in the same token, Jake, the excellent Jake the Snake documentary that came out a couple of years ago, him getting into the Hall of Fame was a really big deal. And that's actually a very lovely point of the documentary. As Alex said in the email there, that if it means a lot of people, and I've never said that it doesn't. I just, the reason why I say it means nothing is because it is just, it's a PR thing. And that's fine. But then if it's just a PR thing, I don't think you could put a lot of debate on who should go in and who shouldn't, because it's not a real Hall of Fame. Kid Gaskin says, Adam, what was your favorite WCPW pay-per-view? Mine was Fight Back. Your promo at the start of the show was amazing.
Oh, thank you. I really, really liked No Regrets. I think that was the one where we had the rumble where Martin Kirby hit the Zoidberg elbow for the first time. Like, that was insane. It's always going to be. What was the name of it? What was the name of the pay-per-view I wrestled at? It was... Son of a... Hang on. I should. How do I not remember? I'm going to kick myself.
Come on, mate.
Sorry, mate. It was Refuse to Lose. Of course it was. Refuse to Lose. The first one where I wrestled Rampage. That was my favorite thing. He absolutely chopped the hell out of me. But it was a real joy to just do some stupid heel nonsense and then get put through a table.
Aaron Donnelly, which wrestlers do you think are great but maybe don't get the recognition they deserve? Personally, I think Nick Aldis doesn't get as much attention as he should. Aldis is a great shout. Yeah.
Keith Lee doesn't get as much praise as he deserves, mm-hmm, because he deserves more praise than he'll ever get because he's the best. But in terms of, like, unsung heroes, I guess, like, Tyson Kidd is like the kind of the the perennial answer, especially now that he can't wrestle anymore. I think Jason Jordan's always going to go underappreciated now, just because, you know, the whole Kurt Angle son thing wasn't so great, but he was so bloody wonderful in American Alpha.
Brendan says, "Hey guys, I just wanted to say I loved the Stadium Stampede match. My question is, do you think it also would have worked as an elimination match? And should one of these eliminations be Hangman drinking Hager under the table and pinning him while he was passed out? Cheers for the content. Much love from the Swaft Under." Sort of was an elimination match. They sort of eliminated them as they went, before poor old Sammy was the last man standing. So yeah, it sort of was in a way.
Yeah, I mean, he made a whole deal out of it, wasn't it? Just like getting to his feet and saying, "I'm the last man standing, so I won."
I won, yeah.
Yeah.
Lynn says, "Hey, everyone, hope you're all doing great. This is a very interesting question. I'll be curious to get your take on this because I'm not sure. Thank you so much for all the great wrestling content all year long. My question isn't a wrestling question, but rather a video game question. Unfortunately, I need to give a bit of background information to ask it, so I'm sorry. Do never apologize. I've only enjoyed playing three games in my adult life, Beyond Two Souls, Until Dawn, and The Last of Us. And technically, one of my friends had to control the game since my coordination isn't there. I've really been looking forward to the release of The Last of Us 2, so much so that I've actually been considered getting my very first console ever. My question is, since I don't have good enough coordination to actually play on my own, what games would you recommend for those just starting out with a PS4 based on the games that I have enjoyed playing?"
So it sounds like story is kind of a big deal. The Uncharted games are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They do require like a fair bit of coordination. That's the thing with like video gaming generally does. But I think there are a couple of games which are kind of more sensory experiences, which I think are fantastic. You know what I would really start out with? There's a game called Journey. Which is just such a beautiful game, and I think like if your coordination's not super there, like it's something that you could kind of almost get to grips with, especially because it's not punishing at all. It's like a beautiful exploration, and like you're going on this journey towards this mountaintop, and it's surprisingly really affecting. And then depending on how that goes, like you could sort of like escalate it from there. But Uncharted, I would always recommend. God, I love that series. Like I'm not the biggest sandbox player in the world, but like I love sandboxes. I'm not the hugest kind of like linear storytelling person, but like Naughty Dog, I love what they do. Obviously bad stuff has been happening recently, so I don't want to comment on like their business practices, but their games I really really like, and anything by Rockstar, so Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead is especially really really good, because that is a real game that you can take at your own pace and just explore. Yeah. You don't like gunfire and like stuff like that. Like there's so much in Red Dead Redemption 2 that even if you can go most of the game, like Tom, our DM in No Rolls Barred, he has had Red Dead Redemption for the better part of a year and has got part like to chapter 2, because he doesn't like doing the story missions. He likes going out into the woods, hunting, crafting, and being at one with nature.
Julian Diaz said, a babyface turning and forming a heel faction, steady getting close to the title picture and eventually winning the championship, or a face turning turning in the championship match, winning that championship via interference and forming a heel faction through that? Which is your preferred option?
I like a heel turn that comes coupled with a title win. It's just great. I really enjoyed Daniel Bryan's. It came at a weird time because he was just about to face Brock Lesnar. But it's just like, it's make a story beat matter, right? Make a choice have the most consequences. Always try and do the most interesting thing. And for me, someone corrupting themselves in order to get something tangible rather than out of frustration is always going to be more interesting.
Abnahav, after a year of AEW, do you think they've dropped the real sports feel? Stadium Stampede match was fun. Orange Cassidy is awesome, but they're not real sports. Instead of trying to be an alternative to WWE, are they just being the same? Which is not bad. Which is not bad, but it is not different as well.
What do you think, Luke?
I mean, I still don't think they have. I mean, me and Ollie talked about this yesterday on the AEW review, that I do think that since the lockdown version of the show, this is the no fans, I do feel like the ranking system has sort of gone out the window slightly. But I still think they are trying to emulate that. I think there is just, they also have various different parts to it, like an Orange Cassidy sort of thing. But Cassidy still works in their sports orientated style. He's just very different to everyone else. And yeah, the Stadium Stampede match did feel just very much like, hey guys, you know, we're in this situation, but let's just have a little bit of fun. I think once they get back to the fans in attendance, maybe we'll see sort of the return of the sport-based version of AEW. That's what I think. Marcus Campbell said, who will be will we see the SmackDown hacker, or is it just like Emelina?
There's no obvious answer here, because yeah. You know, we did find out what was in Eric Rowan's cage
eventually,
for all the good that did. You know, we did see Emelina. Like, I reckon we'll find out who it is. It's whether or not that leads to anything is a different question.
Last few here. Jobber JJ, my question's about MJF. I kind of feel like he's being lost in the shuffle. I wouldn't tease deception or dissension with Wardlow. He's undefeated, but yet to receive a title shot, and the feud with Cody, I don't think is over. My question is, where do you go with MJF? I don't think you could say that he's being lost in the shuffle, because he's still very much a prominent part of TV. But I don't know where you would go with him next. I'm very excited because him being eliminated from the Battle Royale on Wednesday, and he kind of cut that promo. You know, he is ranked number one, and that's the storyline they were telling at the start of that match. It's the first time he's been ranked number one, and which is kind of counter to me saying that they're kind of throwing it all out the window. Just feels like they are in the tag division. I'll be curious to see what they do with him next. I'm not sure where you go with it though.
I want to see him be the next world champion. I think he's genuinely the best thing going in AEW. I think Jericho is fantastic, but in terms of like heels who can properly go and who just have that connection with the crowd, I understand that they're not going to do it until they get fans back. But I want him to be the next champ. I think he's bloody brilliant.
He is great. Xandermania, my best friend/coworker and I were talking this week about wrestling, and he reminded me that the list of Jericho gimmick was 3 years ago. It somehow feels like it was way longer than that. What gimmicks and moments feel like they are much more recent than they actually are? For me, it would be the list of Jericho, as mentioned.
Ooh. Yeah.
Because everything feels like it was forever ago at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like Bray Wyatt feels like it was 5 years ago, when in fact it was... When was the last time we saw Bray? 2018?
Yeah, probably that, with the Leader of World stuff. Yeah, I mean, like, time has moved in such a weird space. Like, someone posted recently that we've just passed the one-year anniversary of Theresa May stepping down as Prime Minister. And I'll be honest, that feels
have
like...
Have we?
Yeah, I'll be honest, like, that feels like it was 3 years ago, not just one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt's a really good answer, though. And very lastly, from Nick, he said, I've noticed after watching Double or Nothing that it was a very face-heavy pay-per-view as far as wins go, with the exception of MJF and Brian Cage, depending on whether he's portrayed as a heel with Taz as manager, if you want to see him in that role. The faces were the ones that won. I was surprised by a lot of the victories, including Cody, The Elite, and Hikaru Shida. In your opinion, do you think this was to make the fans happy during the Steve Corino pandemic and tributes to the recently deceased wrestling stars, or do you think a lot of the faces winning was part of the continued story? Storylines. From what I could tell, Meltzer wrote about this in The Observer, Shida was always planned to win, even before all of the, you know, the Hanakamura stuff. And I think the same with Cody. I think Cody was always set to be the face of the TNT Championship, and the Elites possibly winning over. So I think AEW always, you know, when you kind of listen to interviews with them, they book very far ahead of themselves. So yeah, so I can certainly see that being the case, that they are just, yeah, way ahead of themselves, and that was always the plan.
Isn't Double or Nothing sort of their WrestleMania as well? Like, it's the first anniversary.
All Out kind of is, in a way.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Before I get into your weekend plans, I had this email in from someone called Andy Mack, who said, Luke Adam, was listening to the magazine show and Luke mentioned his age. I googled what age Adam was and I found this page. And it's a page that is called trendandcelebsnow.com/AdamBlompierNetworth.
God.
So here we go. Let's find out a bit about you.
Oh, no.
Adam Blompier is best known as a comedian, writer and performer, known for a member of the sketch comedy group Beta Mailed and a writer for whatculture.com. He also gained fame as a writer for the short film Eugene. He was born August 24th, 1987 in England. House MD star Carolina Wydra appears in his viral short film Eugene, correct?
Correct.
All correct so far. In November 2012, he joined social media with Twitter, posting his debut tweet, "If I'm honest, my heart's not really in this."
That is also true.
On trendsandcelebrities.com, he is one of the successful comedians. That's a direct quote.
I am one of the successful comedians.
He has ranked on the list of the most famous people who were born on August 24th, 1987.
Am I more famous? Oh, wait, on my actual... that one year birthday. Because I'm not more famous than Vince. Vince is definitely the most famous person born the 24th of August.
And he is one of the richest comedian, no plural, who was born in England. Yeah, where are you looking at this?
Screw you, John Bishop.
So we've got, you know, they've got your first name, your profession, your age, your birth sign, your birth date. Don't have your height and weight, unfortunately, or your body measurements. Don't have your eye hair color or your family and relatives. But here's the important bit. Adam Blompier net worth. According to Trending Celebs Now, Adam Blompier's estimated net worth, salary, income, cars, lifestyle, and much more details have been updated below. So let's see how rich he is.
Cars, plural.
Estimated net worth in 2019, 1 million to 5 million, brackets, approximately.
Oh my God.
And your previous net worth in 2018... was 100,000 to 1 million. So it really went up in that 1 year period.
Yeah, it would. I'm one of the successful comedians. Nothing pays sketch comedy.
You're one of the successful comedian. No plural there.
So obviously, in August, I'll be working with WrestleTalk for 6 months. So I guess we could talk about my salary. This is what I'm evidently valued at. let's see if we can get me there. No, I'm not a millionaire. Wrestling YouTubers tend not to be millionaires. What culture? People who owned What Culture were millionaires, but that didn't quite trickle down to me. God bless. One of the things that we were talking about, like me and Kenny, got off to a rocky start in What Culture, mostly because the bosses told Kenny that I didn't want to work with him, which wasn't true. It's very interesting, like how Vince likes to sow seeds of paranoia in the star, because it really just it aids morale and really gets everyone working their hardest. But like, just like Kenny, at one point, I don't know who he found it out from, but found out I was like my salary at What Culture, and it was like almost double what it actually was. And he was apparently just going around just like, why is he getting this much? This is insane. And like, apparently, like everyone who heard it was like, what, he's getting that? But and it's like, no. So thank you for that, Luke. Brings back lovely memories from olden times. And I'm not a millionaire, sorry to quell the dreams of those who want to grow up to write lists on YouTube for the money.
It's not where it is.
I do the job because I like it, not because it pays £1 million.
This comes in from Josephine, who says, "Hi, Luke. I just thought I'd let you know the true meaning of the word simp, because this came up on Quizzlemania last week, I think it was."
Oh, great.
A simp is a male who A simp is a male who donates money to e-girls on Twitch. E-girls are greatly looked down upon, greatly being bolded there by the gaming community, because they are not real gamers. They just exploit the platform to make easy money by wearing small, skimpy clothing and flirting with their male viewers, the kind that spend a lot of time in their mother's basements to get more donations. They're also known as Twitch thots. Most of them have come from what's called an OnlyFans. A site blocked by paywall where they sell their nudes. So when an e-girl gets called out, the men who defend them are labeled as a simp. Being a simp is a bad thing because any man with dignity and self-respect would not want to watch them be terrible at games they don't know or donate money to her just to get them to talk back to you. It was a cool new word to say, so a lot of people misused it and the real meaning of it gets lost. But it originally started in the gaming community, as most awful things do, to stop... that was my editorial there.
Yeah, I got that bit.
To stop people from sticking up for those manipulating egos. I heard on Quizzlemania the other night that you didn't know what it meant. It definitely does not mean defending or respecting women. Hopefully you've been enlightened. Obligatory reminder to keep up the great and consistent work. Goodbye.
What do you think a thot is, Luke?
I have no idea, mate. Can you help me on that one?
Because I saw your brow furrow when you said thot. Thot stands for that hoe over there.
Oh, lovely stuff. God, the internet is a terrible place.
Isn't it?
Isn't it just? So, on to brighter things. Have you got any plans for the weekend?
Have I got any plans for the weekend? So, I've got this... sorry, my partner is a lot more internet literate than I am. And so literally just before I told you, my partner sent me a message on WhatsApp saying, thought means that hoe over there. Like, thank you. Because I believe it was my partner who told me, because I'm a bit behind the pace as well. But weekend plans. Got a big shop coming. Fridge is almost empty, so that'll be fun. Maybe play some games on Tabletop Simulator.
Oh, lovely.
And that's it.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing. I'm actually reading a really fun book at the moment, so I want to see if I can finish that off. It's a kind of history of board games. Like, it's kind of like the 100 most important board games and stuff. It's like the history of board games and like which board games are most impactful, and like doing deep dives into kind of old historical board games like the Royal Game of Ur or Senet or Nine Men's Morris and all these weird games that like conquered the world but like are lost to time. It's really cool. About you?
I might do some painting around the house, so some house tasks. Got to mow the lawn. I've got a really boring weekend planned, although I am doing a murder mystery tomorrow over Zoom.
Ooh.
Which I think will be fun. Yeah, pretty much that's about it, to be honest. Not a great deal. So,
but you know, we're just wasting our YouTube millions stuck at home.
No, if anything, I'm generating more of the millions because I'm not spending on anything. So let's leave it there. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with the SmackDown review with Andy and Pete, who, for the record, I do not think is cheating at Quizzlemania. A few people have sort of taken my comments a little bit to heart. I don't think he is.
Pete's definitely not. Andy, so.
But no, he's not. Anyway, that is all we've got time for on this show. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.